As First Lady Melania Trump calls for more positive habits on social media, and in the wake of the deadly school shooting in Parkland, a local study takes a look at bullying as a major public health issue. Good Thursday morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live on the radio at 9. Also, make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, after the massacre in Parkland, what one local doctor says are ways to reduce bullying when it comes to students. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, First Coast Success sits down with JU President Tim Cost to look at some of the changes the school is bringing to Arlington. Plus, it's our monthly Art Attack Roundtable on this show as our group looks at the issue of arts funding in the city. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, it's a public health issue that increasingly is seen to have deadly consequences. Bullying. It's a form of youth violence that can take many forms, from online harassment to physical intimidation. Police say the accused shooter in the Parkland massacre at a South Florida high school had been bullied and had allegedly started to become a bully himself. This is not uncommon. The American Academy of Pediatrics over the years has developed and published a number of policy statements to address youth violence, and they've made recommendations about bullying prevention. It turns out local physicians are also studying the issue. Tragically, their new study is quite timely. We're pleased to welcome Dr. Madeline Joseph right now. She's professor of emergency medicine and pediatrics at UF College of Medicine Jacksonville, and she joins us now with more about this new research. Dr. Joseph, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
We want your calls about the issue of bullying as a public health issue, in particular after the tragedy in Parkland. Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. What are your thoughts about this? Especially we want to hear from parents. 549-2937 or go online. Send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, and we want your comments on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Now, as I mentioned, Doctor, the American Academy of Pediatrics has studied this. They've put out policy papers. Significant numbers of kids visit emergency rooms every day in this country. Emergency department staff, you say, have a unique opportunity to identify and study bullying as a public health issue. Can you talk a little bit about what you mean by that? How is bullying a public health problem in this country?
Absolutely. When we look at public health issues, we're looking at how common is it. So if you think about it, one out of three children are affected by bullying. And the CDC, with the CDC recent studies, looked at about 20 to 56% of children are involved in bullying. So if there's a class of 30 children, you have 6 to 17 children are going to be impacted. So that's a pretty big numbers that we're looking at. As far as the numbers of patients that we encounter in the emergency department, we have a great opportunity to screen them for bullying. But in the emergency department is also very busy. There's, especially now with the flu season, et cetera. So it's a challenge to be able to screen. So the study we were looking at is actually to look at how feasible is it to screen for bullying in the ED, and also what can we do about it?
Sure. You can screen, and then what do you do with that data once you get it? If you identify something that's disturbing, then what?
Yes, exactly. So, part of it is we're trying to figure out how much time does it take. And is it going to slow down the patient flow in the emergency department? And that's really what this study is about. And just from, we just started this about a week ago, and the reports we're getting is it's really taking about a couple of minutes. But the key is, we're in the process, we're actually educating our own physicians on information. How common is it? What are the signs of bullying? How do you figure out if they, this is a child that's at risk? And again, we're trying also to prevent not just the injury and the violence prevention, but also trying not to do so much testing on these children, because it's not unusual that some of the children who are bullied they come to the emergency department with different complaints. If it's one day, it's a headache. A couple of weeks later, they're coming with belly pain and back pain, etc. So they're really coming for help. It's a cry for help.
But it might not be obvious that that's what's going on at first, right?
Exactly. And that's why when we talk about the utility of screening, you're really getting to the bottom of what's going on with that child. And instead of wasting the time with different testing, you're actually getting to the bottom of what the issue is and giving them solutions. And we have resources in the community, so also connecting the families and empowering them with knowledge and the resources when where they can get help is extremely helpful.
Do you think bullying should be addressed more squarely as a public health issue in America? Let us know your thoughts. 549-2937. How can doctors ask kids this question? If a kid comes into the ER and says, my stomach hurts or I'm having anxiety, how do you screen? A lot of young people might not want to admit that this is what they're dealing with.
Absolutely. And just similar to how we're now screening for suicide, so any child 12 and above, and this is in every emergency department in the country, we screen for suicide with specific questions. And that's regardless of what their complaint is. I think the same thing we're hoping will happen for bullying, because also there's correlation between bullying and suicide. So some of the studies I looked at, vast majority, 55% of the kids who admit to being bullied, they're also positive on the suicide screen. So really the essence is to start, screening everyone with simple questions. I mean, and children are amazing. I mean, they do answer you when you ask them the specific questions. Is anybody bossing you at school? Are you enjoying going to school? Especially if they say they don't want to go to school. And the question shouldn't be to punish them or assume they're bad students, but actually to ask them, why do you not want to go to school? And you would be surprised sometime with the answers.
And what is so maddening and heartbreaking to discover about the shooter in South Florida, Nicholas Cruz, is that he had interacted with authorities dozens of times and meaningful intervention had never occurred. We are also learning that he had apparently been bullied over and over by classmates and his brother.
Absolutely. And this is not unique to him per se. 70% of the shooters are actually bully victims. And we also, feel bad for the victims, but we should also treat the bully themselves because they need help. They come from broken families. They're not paid attention to. They're not getting the help they need. And we're not really intervening besides just,
Yeah, there was no effective intervention for this young man. And despite the fact that social service agencies, law enforcement had made contact with him and his caregivers many times, but there was not effective intervention.
Absolutely. So this combination, there's no help, there's access to guns, and the combination is fatal. And so, and the sign that they're, bringing weapons to school is a sign that they're trying to portray violent behavior and power. And that's really the sign of bullying, is the power imbalance.
He was acting out in other ways, too. He was bringing dead animals to school. There were all sorts of disturbing red flags. What are some other red flags as a physician that you look for in young people, in teens, when you study this issue of bullying as a public health problem?
And I just want to mention, it's not only teens. Actually, bullying is really much
bullying
more common.
Bullying in the workplace is a problem, yes.
Absolutely. And in middle school, it's even worse than high school. So we really need to pay attention to all age groups at that, from this perspective. But the signs, the parents can look for if your child is coming, coming in with bruises and their clothes are torn, they lost their iPhone, they don't want to go to school, they're losing friends, they're repeatedly complaining about different things every morning. If it's not headache, it's belly pain. So really trying to avoid, going to school. And also if you see any decrease in their grades, if a lot of time they're not really paying attention to the teachers anymore, they're just worrying about what's going to happen next. So if you see any of those signs, it's worth a conversation. you know, open conversation, non-judgmental, and just ask them simply, you know, how is it going at school? Any of your friends getting into trouble? I mean, indirect questions could be really helpful as well.
Especially when you're driving along in the car. I've often found you can get a little more success sometimes that way.
That's a perfect advice because it's a close area. They can't run away from you, although they can still use their iPhone, but their phones, but definitely good time.
All righty. Let's go to some calls now for the good doctor. As you have College of Medicine Jacksonville undertakes studying of bullying as a public health crisis. What are your thoughts about this? Give us a call right now, 549-2937, to join the conversation here on the show. Charles is in Ponte Vedra. Hey, Charles, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Yes, hey, Dr. Joyce, it's Charles.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how you doing?
Doing great.
My comment on bullying is, in the early stages of bullying, is the kids are scared to say something to the parents or to the teachers. But eventually, when the child opens up to the parent, the child will not say anything to the teacher. And what happens is that the kid's scared to say something to the teachers. So I think that the teachers need to open themselves up where the kids will talk to them about bullying.
Thank you for this great comment. And a lot of the bullying happens so quickly. We're talking like 30 seconds. So the teacher may or may not be able to see it, or it could happen outside the classroom, in the playground, in the hallway, in the on the bus. So they may not be aware of it, but you're absolutely right. The children, sometimes they don't have confidence of the adult action. Are they
going to
do anything?
And they're afraid that if the adults intervene, that the kids will retaliate even more horribly the next day.
Absolutely. And they feel powerless. So this is really exactly what we have to do as a community. So it's the physicians, it's the school teachers, the parents. We really need to create a culture where it's not tolerable.
Well, what about the culture that schools have tried to create? You know, a zero tolerance culture for that bullying is not tolerated anymore. I mean, I do think that there has been a general improvement, certainly since I was in middle and high school. You know, it's not what it used to be, but I don't think they've eradicated it by any means.
No, and I think we need to be aware of cyberbullying because, you know, in the past it was, you know, if it happened at school, at least when the child gets home, they're safe, they feel safe. But now, you know, a lot of the bullying is actually on social media, so there is no safe place. And that's why a lot of these kids will have nightmares and depression because they feel like there's no way to hide. So I think the first thing, you know, as a culture is to be open about it, you know, talk about it, create the environment where, you know, the teachers, the parents, take it seriously and not tolerate it because it's only going to escalate.
Raphael is a Long Beach Boulevard. Raphael, thanks for your call. Go ahead.
Hello, my name's Raphael, and my question is, in line with the topic of bullying, is the proliferation of gun violence culture in our video games with the kids also adds to, you know, all this violence going on with our young people of today?
Okay, thanks for that.
That's a great question, and I'm always worried about it because I you know, I have two boys, and when they were younger, they really liked these games. On one hand, you know, obviously it could impact them, but on the other hand, if they really look at it as a game, that's not going to necessarily impact their behavior. So there, to my knowledge, there's really no studies to look at the correlation between the two. On the other hand, what I know of, you know, people from the military, when they come back, a lot of time how they deal with it is they play video games just to get, you know, some of those behavior out of their system. They keep it as a game. So it's not necessarily, I mean, I see your concern, but at the same time, I'm not really aware of if there's any data to show us that these games are terrible.
So you don't think that violence in popular culture is necessarily a driver of this issue with young people?
I mean, we have to create open communication and more, you know, acceptance of diversity, because a lot of time the bullying is targeting anybody that looks different, anybody that is perceived to be weak, or if they don't have, you know, good communication skills and they don't get along with everyone. So I think instead of, you know, the focus should be how do we create an environment where the communication is positive and we accept each other for who we are and we embrace diversity. So I think that's the environment. But in the same time, we shouldn't glorify violence, because if we're doing this, then we're actually being supportive to bullying.
Lots of calls for UF's Dr. Madeline Joseph and their study looking at bullying as a public health issue. Emotions still raw in Florida and around the country in the wake of the school shooting in South Florida. How about the tweets, by the way, from those kids in Parkland, Florida, Doctor, after Melania Trump has really taken up the banner to push back and speak out against cyberbullying. That's her big initiative as First Lady. Yeah. And the survivors of the school shooting are saying, how about getting your husband, the president, to stop cyberbullying on Twitter? What about that?
I'm trying to stay out of politics, but never not very successful in doing so. I think we do need to model, regardless of our position, you know, from top to down, we need to model a good behavior and anti-bullying behavior, and not accepting that regardless of our position.
Yeah, I mean, because she seems quite sincere. She has an 11-year-old son. She's trying to create a more civil social media world, which I think is something we all want. But anyway, let's go to Mark in Fleming Island. Hi, Mark.
Hi, is that me?
Yes.
Hey, sorry, I'm not in Fleming Island. That's why you threw me. I was just going to make a comment about the school's responses to bullying, and I think that they're totally inadequate. I'm not trying just to level criticism for the sake of criticism, but apparently the response, the typical response, is just to ignore it. And I'm not sure what the solution is. I really realize that you can't be with the kids all the time, but it's still a problem. It was a problem when I was a kid in high school. My kids are graduated. It was a problem when they were in school, and I assume that it's still a problem. And I wasn't surprised to hear that shooter was bullied. Now, that crossed my mind before it was mentioned on the news. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Yeah, and it's so upsetting to hear that. As you mentioned, Dr. Joseph, more often than not, kids that are bullied commit suicide rather than act out violently toward others. In that case, in Parkland, this kid acted out violently toward his classmates. The more common result is a suicide, tragically, though.
Well, it can present in many ways, because, you know, a lot of the bulliers, they can't really follow the authority. They challenge the authority. So sometimes they may end up in jail. They abuse, as an adult, their significant others, their families, their children. So really could manifest in many ways, but it's all negative. And obviously the ultimate, if they really don't get help, suicide is the, you know, one of those ways. But there's other many negative consequences to it
and
in their life.
With regard to your study, is it your hope that your study will be replicated by other hospitals, other institutions, so that this can be something that is more widely available? It's a more common protocol?
Absolutely. Our goal is to publish the results of the study on a national level and really bring the awareness that maybe perhaps bullying screening should be done in every emergency department, similarly to how we screen for suicide in children 12 and above. So I think I really believe that this is affecting our nation, our children, their sense of safety, And we have many, at any point of interaction with children, we should be looking for these signs and trying to take care of it so it doesn't really escalate to something tragic like what we're experiencing now.
Here's a tweet. Unfortunately, bullying is a cultural issue that has proliferated throughout our society. It continues long past high school and college and into adult life. Mark is in St. Augustine. Hi, Mark. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I was just calling to ask a question about, and I am completely against physical forms of bullying. I have a zero tolerance for that. I get that part. But I guess a cliche could be, you know, sticks and stones can break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Where are we as adults, as parents, teaching our kids that, hey, even though someone may call you something, they make fun of, I had huge, big ears when I was a kid. And kids made fun of me all the time, but my parents said, don't let that bother you. You're better than that. And it never did. And so at what point are we, I hate to use this other cliche, are we raising snowflakes versus teaching kids how to deal with some of the issues that life is going to throw at you whenever you're an adult? And so, again, the physical part, I'm 100% behind a zero tolerance on physical bullying. To me, that's physical assault, not necessarily bullying. But verbal stuff, you know, when do we help our kids deal with those kind of life issues? Because they're going to happen throughout your life.
Yeah, thanks for that, Mark. And by the way, here's a comment on our Facebook page that says the exact opposite. This is fascinating because people differ on this. Paula writes, frequently parents aren't even helpful. If I heard from my parents, just ignore them and they will go away. I heard it umpteen times. So go ahead.
I think we need to do both. I think it's not acceptable because there's also psychological consequences when the person is bullying other people. They're not safe. They're actually victims. So I think we need to address it from both ends. It's not tolerable to on purpose show imbalance, you know, power imbalance, and you do it repeatedly. And so it's not one-time thing, it's repeatedly. Some of the children would say they get bullied, you know, 2 to 3 times a week. So this is on a regular basis. So I agree with you, Mark, like we should empower our kids not to be impacted with some of these words. And we teach them that you're worth it. And, you know, these words are words and they don't represent who you are. I agree with you 100%. And that's actually part of how we empower our children. On the other hand, we should create the culture that it is not right to display, you know, pick on people who may be perceived weak or different and repeatedly, you know, bullying them. So there's a balance between the two. But I think I understand both point of views.
When is the study completed and when can we see the results?
Well, we just started, so we're excited about it. And, you know, we're going through it. So we're hoping in a couple of months we'll have some pilot data. And I think, you know, the study is really looking at the feasibility of the screening. So it's, you know, as long as we show that it's not going to be in the way of patient flow and, you know, it depends on the results we get. But really based on what we've learned in the past, I mean, it's significant. There is a study that looked at almost 900 children in the pediatric ED. And 78%, you know, were even witness or victim or both. So it's common. Our study is really concentrating on just kids with physical injuries. So we just targeted that population just because it's pretty straightforward and easy to identify. But we're just really trying to figure out how much is it time consuming. And also we're going to survey the providers who did the screening to see if they felt like their attitude towards bullying, anti-bullying, I should say, changed, and if there's any challenges along the way that we can overcome so we can do universal screening for bullying.
Well, we look forward to the results of that, and we thank you so much for joining us this morning. Thanks for being here, Doctor.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Dr. Madeline Joseph, she's Professor of Emergency Medicine and Pediatrics at UF College of Medicine, Jacksonville. And much more still ahead later. The Spectator checks in with a look at the March social calendar, a very busy one, lots of ideas on tap for you. But up next, First Coast Success profiles one dynamic guy, JU President Tim Cost. Back in a moment.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Personal Injury and Wrongful Death Law Firm. Highway, hospital, home, work, where negligence causes injury or death makes a difference in the law that applies and in the result. More at waynehogan.law.
The Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services works to help feed kids who are at risk of hunger during the summer months. Organizations can join the Summer Break Spot program to become an official meal site. Details at summerbreakspot.com.
WJCT and the Florida Theater present Wild Kret live on stage at the Florida Theater March 4th at 1 p.m. Watch the Kret brothers bring their creature adventure fun from the popular PBS Kids series to life on stage. Tickets available at floridatheater.com.
Wouldn't it be nice to know what's in the local daily newspaper, even if you have blindness or diminishing eyesight? WJCT's radio reading service can help. You'll hear what's in the Florida Times Union every day, articles, op-eds, obituaries, even the comics. Sign up at wjct.org/radio reading. Our thanks to Florida Eye Specialists, Delta Gamma of UNF, and the Radio Reading Service volunteer readers for giving voice to the printed word.
He's brought energy and excitement to both the JU campus and its surrounding neighborhood, Arlington. In today's First Coast Success, Karen Bruni Mathis of the Financial News and Daily Record talks with Jacksonville University President Tim Cost.
Five years ago, Tim Cost closed out 30 years of corporate senior management to return to Jacksonville to become the 12th president of his alma mater, Jacksonville University. Beginning with the class of 1981, Cost served multiple roles: collegiate athlete, business major, resident assistant, and one of the top 10 winningest pitchers in JU baseball history. After decades of corporate leadership at several of the world's best-known institutions, and after investing several years on JU's Board of Trustees as an alumnus, Cost assumed the presidency of JU in 2013. Cost also leads JU's Aspire campaign, a $120 million campus-wide initiative to rejuvenate, reinvent, and renovate the university from programming to infrastructure. Tim Cost, welcome to First Coast Success.
Thanks. Great to be here.
You bought property both north and south of the campus. What all is happening on that? That's a real show of leadership for the institution as well.
Yeah, thank you. One of the ways I thought we could make tangible what we believed is not to call press conferences, which I'm not that big a fan of. That's fine. I mean, that's the coin of the realm of other industries, whether you're an elected official or a corporation. That's not really right for us. But that we would start moving ahead, especially what you're referencing is the land of the South, which was the former boys' home parcel, 40 acres. So a substantial, at the time, we were a little under 200 acres. I love the piece of land. The boys' home is a place where, as a young athlete, you know, all of us baseball players would go over and play basketball against the young men that were over there. So we all knew the place. So when I went over to tour it in early 13, obviously in kind of difficult disrepair, it was no longer a going concern. So rather than have 40 acres laying essentially dead to use for anybody in Arlington, we started to have conversations about acquiring it. We did. We acquired it a couple of years ago. Now, to your good question, I envision to the north of us, which is the 60-acre parcel that my predecessor sold back in 2008, that is going to be extremely active and engaged and is underway now with something called Dolphin Point Landing, which is very exciting, a multiple-use graduated care facility that's going to go from just kind of classic on-the-water, beautiful condominiums, into the whole world of nursing and elder care. Terrific game plan there by a graduate of our university, former basketball teammate of ours, Gilmore, Greg Nelson. To that, we're going to be attaching, both strategically and ultimately physically, a brand new occupational therapy center, which is going to be in the far northwest corner of that piece of land, which is exciting because our new doctorates, our advanced degrees in occupational therapy are being very well received. They'll open this summer. And then all the way up, almost right onto University Boulevard, so the northeast corner of it, is going to be one of the largest investments we've ever made, something that you follow closely, and I think you've gotten more insight on it than anybody early on, which is a new academic health sciences complex, which we're going to be making some announcements about in the near future. But so the entire north side, think of it in terms of health and education, the connection of nursing and speech pathology and kinesiology and mental health counseling and occupational therapy, all of which we teach. And now there are going to be constituents there who need what we teach. So it's a good, great place for practicum. Back to the South, we've got beautiful land on the waterfront. I'm committed to building a convocation center. We're looking hard at whether we want to create a waterfront performing arts center. There's lots of people now, which is kind of exciting, people coming forward with more thoughtful, strategic outlook ideas on what would one do with a beautiful piece of waterfront property that stares at the jaguars. You know, it's very different than when I bought it 5 years ago, 4 years ago. People said, what do you do with this? What, everything from what the jaguars, what Lamping and Shad Khan are doing to what Peter Rummel's doing, all stuff you cover. It's an exciting time to be where we are and be part of that conversation.
What else would you like to share?
I think the coverage and the treatment of higher education around here is smart. I think people, I've lived in the Northeast where a lot of times the universities are in the crosshairs, it seems, or there's a cynicism built up. I think the four schools in this town are relatively speaking, fortunate. We're trying to make some forward-leaning decisions. I think this is the warmest, in terms of environment, not weather, flattest, most responsive community that my wife and I have ever moved into, and we've been together 35 years. And for that, we're thankful. I think people want to see their local private and public and HBCU. I think they want to see these schools do well.
Well, Tim Kost, thank you for joining First Coast Success.
Thank you, Karen.
Read more about Tim Kost and JU in today's Daily Record. Well, it's a multi-million dollar industry in the city, providing work and entertainment for tens of thousands of people. So why does the local arts scene always have so much trouble getting proper funding? It's a problem. Mm-hmm. Here with their thoughts about that, our amazing new arts roundtable, The Art Attack. Lee Hamby of the Five and Dime Theater, good morning.
Good morning.
Shawana Brooks, arts and culture developer with the Jacksonville Public Library, here today.
Good morning.
Robert Arley White is here, VP of Development with the Museum of Science and History.
Hi, Melissa.
Suzanne Hudson-Smith, she's Development Director at Florida Theater.
Good morning.
And Ryan Ollie, who heads up development with the Baptist MD Anderson Cancer Center.
Good morning, Melissa.
Wow, what a good group today. All right, this is a problem. It's always been a problem. Shawana Brooks, let's start with you. We know that arts and culture is an economic driver for this city. All of you, I think, are on the same page that it should be better funded. Why do you think it isn't?
I know there are a lot of challenges a lot of times as far as figuring out like funding sources or connecting people sometimes to organizations that they might want to use for charitable giving. That's definitely one issue. Another, I think, is just rallying people around how much the arts can be effective if they do donate. And that doesn't always have to be like huge sums of money, even though people will take huge sums of money. It's great if, you know, you can just get them into understanding how a little bit of that goes back to such a return on our investment to our entire community.
Communicating that can be challenging. Robert Arley White, as someone who used to head up the Cultural Council, you used to have to make that case to both the city and to private funders. It can be tough sometimes to make that case. Why is it so tough?
Well, I think that there are, golly, that is a tricky question. I think that there are so many things in Jacksonville that require attention. And for many people, the arts is, well, that's something else, and you can put that aside, but these needs need to be addressed. But my argument is that there is simply no challenge that faces our city that doesn't have an art and cultural component to its solution. And you see that in our hospitals, you see that in our schools, you see that even from the police. I remember Sheriff Rutherford and certainly Mike Williams very, very supportive of what the arts can do to mitigate crime in neighborhoods and those kinds of things. So I think the challenge is in how we tell our story and how we connect people to resources.
And that is one reason why we are doing this monthly discussion on the Art Attack. Suzanne Hudson-Smith, for those listening right now, what's your rationale for why the arts deserve better funding here on the First Coast?
You know, I think Bob said it great, in that people sometimes think that entertainment dollar or that value kind of goes over to the side. But we're at the heart, as he said, of everything that the city does. It's, when you look at Jacksonville and you come into it, you see sculptures, you see art everywhere, especially on the buildings now. And there's so much to do. My calendar is filled with opportunities, as is everyone. And it comes down to that advocacy and that awareness. I think we definitely need to see some more city funding coming to all of the arts organizations, because we've grown in number of arts organizations providing that cultural thrive throughout the community, and that funding level has really stayed flat. So we want to see that, but as I talk to our donors, it is diversity of programming that brings so many different people in to have a personal conversation about sustaining the historic value of the Florida Theater and supporting all of the art that goes on downtown.
So it's a good problem to have so many exciting venues and so many talented programs and people, Ryan Ali. Mm-hmm. But the, as she said, as Suzanne said, the level of funding isn't keeping pace with that.
I think the story is so important to tell. And to Bob's point, you know, $70 million, the Cultural Council really encapsulated what that story is. You know, City of Jacksonville spends about $3 million roughly, and the return on investment is $70 million. I don't know another sector that can have that solid return on investment. And that's just looking at 25 organizations. Like, if you looked at what we're doing overall as a creative sector, it's a huge driving force. And I think it's just those one-on-one conversations. You know, I can't tell people enough, please call your city council rep. You know, reach out to the mayor's office, let them understand the importance of art and culture. People are looking to relocate to Jacksonville and come here. They want to see a pretty city with art and that's culturally diverse. And how do we work together as a community and build that and tell the story?
Yeah. And Lee Hamby, you know, when people are considering to move somewhere, they look at certain things, the quality of the schools, the quality of, you know, certain intangibles. That's one of them. Are there things to do?
Right.
Is there a creative class that sort of makes it a fun place to live? That's you guys.
You would think that. I always question, why don't people take it seriously? I just don't understand. For some reason in our city, they don't take it as seriously as other cities. And it is such an important thing in, I know, my life and all of our lives sitting around this table. It just doesn't make any sense that why people don't love it as much as we do. Because it's such a game changer in our community, you know?
So this is something that all of you talk about amongst yourselves, but I can sense your frustration when you try to go outside your circle and talk about it outside your circle. Shawana, is that an accurate way to describe your feelings about this?
Definitely frustration is a really great adjective to give to my emotions. Just as Lee said, the seriousness of what arts and culture is taken into, and just the time that we all do to make these exciting programs. And we get great attendance, but we're seeing a lot of the same faces. And Jacksonville is a huge city. I don't even know if we get 1% of the population that comes to a major art event all the time. And I try to do my best, of course, with the work that I do at the library to push out programs that are highly diverse and free. And still, you know, the commitment to getting people to come downtown sometimes is unfortunate. They seem to think that this story of downtown being this unsafe place, you know, driven by people everywhere that are asking for money. I'm downtown almost every day. That's never my experience when I'm walking around the streets. I see pretty much the same people there every day. And that's also disappointing. I want more people, more attention coming downtown.
Suzanne, you are at the Florida Theater. It's downtown. Well, it's in the urban core.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the Florida Theater is a gem. And
thank you.
Not only is it a beautiful theater, it's got amazing programming.
Yeah.
You draw from all over. So I think that your venue is living proof that people will come if they have a good reason to.
Oh, absolutely. And the programming has grown so much for us. And we do try to represent the community as a whole. So in one night you may see Bill Maher coming in, and another night you might see Ted Nugent coming in. You might see Paula Poundstone. You'll see comedians.
Could we get them at the same time?
I don't don't think we can hold that many people.
Well, you want more art and culture and more people downtown. Now, I know that would do it. That, so I'm just throwing that out there. That's
I'm putting that down in my book of thoughts to look into that. But we do drive, and we are a driver for folks coming in. And we've heard those same things about downtown. And we prove it wrong almost every single night when we have a show. And we get over 1,500 people into our house and out safely. And they have an incredible experience in the core. We want them to stay downtown longer, though, to enjoy the other arts that are taking place around the urban core.
Sure, that's the challenge. Bob?
Well, I think we know that if the Florida Theater turns on its lights, it mitigates crime in something like a 5-block radius. And every time there's an arts event downtown, it's a safer place. Mm-hmm. So what we really need is more. And I also want to just jump in quickly and say that, I agree. I think the city of Jacksonville could do a lot better. I think the what they invest in the arts is something like less than 0.25% of the of the budget. But I think we could all do better. It's not just depending upon that public stream, but corporations, individuals. It's a real diverse pot that makes for a successful organization, whether it's an arts organization, generally a nonprofits thing, or any small business. You want to make sure that everybody is doing their part, and showing up is really where it all starts.
Yeah. What have other cities done to address this issue? What have we learned from other cities that might have had this same kind of challenge?
You know, the private sector steps up, and we can't forget the private sector in Jacksonville. You know, we're all kind of moving towards that direction of relying on city funds. The reality is that the city believes in us, believes in the arts community, and then it's going to allow us to kind of drive other kind of private sector dollars. And I think the important thing is getting the message out there. You know, other successful cities, very, very similar to us, really builds a reputation on art and culture. And, you know, to Shawna's point, we do tend to talk to ourselves a lot. We do tend to be in this in our own group. I challenge everyone to get outside of our circles and be different, be dynamic, go and have conversations with people and get them to come in. I mean, that's the best way that we're going to be able to kind of, you know, struggle with this.
We always talk about at the Five and Dime how if we can get the people in the door, they will always come back because they will enjoy what we do. So I beg people to go enjoy whatever arts organization it is. You will love it and you will want to go back and it'll be contagious and you'll want to go visit other things.
Yeah. You know, I think the part of us is if we build it, they will come. If we produce that art, people will come see it or participate in it or experience it. And our job is still to get out and talk to people. But a lot of what I do is I really try to listen to what's going on with our patrons who come in, with our members who are giving, and our corporations who are giving, to make sure we're connecting them in the right way, what they need from us to be able to really start expanding.
That's our Art Attack for this month, but they'll be back next month, which is very exciting. Thank you so much
Thank you, Melissa.
Lee Hamby of the Five and Dime, Robert Arley White of Mosh, Shawna Brooks with the Library, Suzanne Hudson-Smith, Florida Theater, and Ryan Ali with Baptist MD Anderson. We'll be right back.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Personal Injury and Wrongful Death Law Firm. When people are hurt through no fault of their own, answering who, what, when, where, why, and how is critical to proving the truth. More at waynehogan.law.
The Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services works to help feed kids who are at risk of hunger during the summer months. Organizations can join the Summer Break Spot program to become an official meal site. Details at summerbreakspot.com.
On the next Fresh Air, comics Nick Kroll and John Mulaney. They'll host the Independent Spirit Awards on IFC Saturday night, honoring the year's best independent films. They also do the lead voices in the new Netflix animated comedy series Big Mouth, about a group of kids going through puberty, dealing with new sexual urges and considerable embarrassment. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
This weekend's Academy Awards will celebrate all things Hollywood. But let's not get carried away. Business is not booming like it used to. A new report suggests one reason. Studios may be leaving money on the table by not embracing diversity on and off screen. Oscar winners and industry losers. Next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Something to keep in mind when you shop for skincare products. Be careful with the usual healthy sounding words.
You may buy something that says all natural or botanical or pure, but it may be none of the above. And so consumers are misled by companies today.
I'm Kai Rizdal, a business that wants more regulations. Next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, the second annual Move It 5K takes over downtown Jacksonville Saturday morning. It's sponsored by Cowford Chop House and benefits the Dolores Barweaver Policy Center. What a great cause. Here with more, race organizer Nicole White, also Jamie Rossland and Michelle Lasky with the Policy Center. Ladies, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, Nicole, let's start with you. Now, this comes to us courtesy of Cowford Chop House. Right down Bay Street, right?
It does. It does. That's where we will start and finish.
Okay, so how can people be part of this?
Pretty easily. You can visit our website, CalfordChopHouse.com. Click on the events link, and that'll take you straight to registration. And you can also register for the event on First Place Sports website as well.
Very nice. Bright and early Saturday morning, downtown, right at the base of the Main Street Bridge there. Jamie, Michelle, this benefits the Dolores Barweaver Policy Center's Open Doors Outreach Network. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. The Open Doors Outreach Network is a collaboration to provide services and support to victims and survivors of sex trafficking in our community, up to the individuals up to the age of 24. So we're leveraging resources that we already have in our community and providing direct care to those individuals.
And this will help you, I assume, get a matching grant. Is that right?
Yeah. So for every dollar raised at the race on Saturday, that'll be matched.
Excellent. And people can do a fun run, too. They don't have to run, right? They can be part of this and help raise money and walk.
Right. And there's a 1 mile kids fun run that starts at 9:30 and then the 5K starts at 10. So it's a very family friendly event that, you know, is benefiting a great cause.
Go to CalfordChopHouse.com. Register now for the Move It 5K this Saturday morning, benefiting the Dolores Barweaver Policy Center. Or you can do the Jacksonville thing and just show up Saturday morning and register on site. But don't do that. Register now and make all of these fabulous women's lives a little easier. Because you would like that, wouldn't you?
That would be nice.
That would be nice. Yeah. So thank you so much, Nicole White, Jamie Rossland, and Michelle Lasky. Again, that's Saturday morning, the Move It 5K downtown on Bay Street, right in front of Cowford Chop House, benefiting Dolores Barweaver Policy Center, which is an amazing organization. And finally, this hour, as March begins, we've got a lot of stuff happening that we want to tell you about. And we begin with a ticket giveaway.
Whoop, whoop.
Two pairs of tickets to the Home and Patio Show today through Sunday at the Prime Osborne, courtesy of... You just dropped your phone.
Sorry.
Courtesy of the Spectator. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning.
So you have tickets to give away, and this is exciting because I guess the guy from Trading Spaces is going to be there.
Well, not the guy. There are multiple guys. It's coming back. It's been away for 10 years.
Right.
10 years. So it's coming back. This is the new... One of the new Carpenters.
This is a new star.
Yes. His name is Brett Tutor.
Okay.
And he's also a musician and a survivalist and a stuntman and about 500 other things.
So he's their hot new face.
Yes.
Right.
And he will be there and he will be talking about the show and then you can meet him. And
you've got two pairs to give away.
Two pairs.
That's exciting.
Yes.
Now, email the show immediately if you want a pair of tickets to the Home and Patio Show, which kicks off today at the Prime Osborne. Email us now
at First Coast
wow,
Connect.
That was scary.
At First Coast Connect.
Hurry and do it.
At First Coast Connect at WJCT.org.
And then
we will pick two winners at random. The unimpeachable Kevin Mershart will select the winners at random. And
I was going to say there are, of course, hundreds of vendors and the I Know Jack's cooking stage, which that's where I'll be all weekend. So come by, have a delicious
You're doing a cooking demo?
I run.
Are they insane?
I run it. Okay, ma'am.
You're running the cooking stage?
Yes.
How did that happen?
I've been doing it for years.
Okay, I'm just teasing you.
No, I don't. I just eat it. I don't
That makes sense.
Yes.
But, you know, you've lost like 50 pounds. Are they even allowing you to eat any of this stuff?
Yes. Oh, I do what I want.
You do it. You're the spectator.
My body's a temple.
Now, we're a little short on time. There are a lot of things on your list here. Beginning
just run
with,
them
I
through,
want to quickly
lady.
Mention at the TU Center, Friday, March 9th, it's Steve Martin and Martin Short.
Steve Martin Short.
That's going to be a lot of fun.
That would be a good puzzle on with Wheel of Fortune, Steve Martin Short.
And Saturday, March 10th, it's going to be Wyclef Jean at Daly's Place. We have a little music just for you. You going to this?
Oh, you know it.
We'll close with that because we're actually almost out of time.
What?
I know. We're not going to get through your list.
Root Ball, March 17th.
Yes.
Tiffany, March 17th.
At the Ponte Vedra Concert Hall.
Collective Con, 23rd, 25th.
At the Morocco Shrine.
Phoenix Rising Festival. I like this with background music. March 24th through the 25th. Gastrofest, March 26th.
All of that is on your website.
Sleeping Giant Festival is on Ray.
Yeah, and you're hosting trivia tonight at European Street in San Marco.
It's the return. We've been gone for 6 months.
Because of the hurricane, right? Didn't they close for after the storm?
$650,000 later.
Are you kidding me?
Would I kid?
Dang.
No, I know.
They're back, baby.
They're back, and it looks really awesome. It's going to be super fun.
All right, 7 o'clock. Come on out for trivia tonight at European Street.
And happy anniversary to Ram. There'll be 10. It's our 10th anniversary.
This Saturday.
Yes.
How about
and
that?
And happy 50th anniversary to the Home and Patio Show.
And get your tickets now. The emails are already coming in.
They're flooding in.
It's thespectator.com. Stop texting while we talk.
No, I'm reading on the book fest. I have to plug the book fest. Saturday at the library.
Go to thespectator.com. She's just going to keep
and
talking.
And the veg fest.
We're
Saturday.
Out of time. One A's up next. I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back with our Friday roundtable tomorrow. Trivia tonight.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.